golf nerds. It's another episode of Swing Thoughts. Coach Tim, I'm going to go out on a limb and say this is episode 256.
You're in the ballpark.
No, you know what happened last week? We did not acknowledge. I remember looking at the file and like, I think that was our 255th show. So welcome to yet another milestone. He's Coach Tim. I'm golf spiritual leader. Yeah, I am. Don't even question it. And today is another interesting episode of this program. Got some stuff to get to. I didn't even tell Tim. I got a thing today I think I'm going to play for you. I think you're really going to enjoy. Somebody sent it to me, and they thought it might be a good thing for the Humble and Fred show, but when I heard it, I said, no, no, no. This is a perfect thing for Swing Thoughts. So I've got that to play for you, and we have a special guest we'll get to in a second. But first, who brings us this program? Who makes us look so good when we're on the golfing course, Tim?
Well, it's whoisoscarbravo.com. That will be your first clue, because they are the makers of the amazing Oscar Bravo polos. I almost said that well.
Yeah, you did it all right.
They're made of fine Italian cotton, and they look absolutely amazing, stunning, in fact, and no one at your club will wear the same polo as you, because they only manufacture 100 of each version every year. So if you're intrigued, make sure you visit whoisoscarbravo.com.
And of course, our title sponsor, you may have heard of this kid, Rory McIlroy, won his 25th tournament. Last weekend, the Zurich Classic, the team event, he and Shane Lowry teamed up. And it was kind of cool because, you know, there's not much that you and I and Rory have in common. But except for the fact that we all have the same driver, okay? Every driver has an inertia number. By the way, his numbers are bananas. Like, his club head speed, a couple times on Sunday, they were in the late 180s, like 187, 188.
Whoa.
I think I saw at one point they did the tracer on his 7-iron or 5-iron, whatever it was. It had the same club head speed as my driver. But for everybody else, what these drivers do is they are more forgiving because they have a higher inertia number. Now golf is about to discover the first ever driver that combines TaylorMade speed with the forgiveness of 10K inertia. Of course, we're talking about the all-new QI10. More forgiveness means more long and straight drives, even off off-center strikes. Find out more. Get ready to experience your drives in 10K with the new QI10. Only from TaylorMade. To learn more, visit TaylorMadeGolf.ca. And our newest sponsor, SecretLinks.Golf. Go check out some amazing golf experiences in Mexico. A while back, Tim sent a note to me saying, hey, there's this guy we should have on the show who is into hypnotism. And I was like, yes, let's do that. And I'm curious as to find out how this will relate to golf. Please welcome to our program from the Greater Toronto Hypnosis Center, Jason Poulter. How are you, sir?
I'm very well, guys. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's good to see you again. We connected months ago, I think. We got put together by some people who thought there might be some mutual benefit for us to chat and meet around hypnosis. And I'm sure that a lot of our listeners might be wondering, hypnosis, really? What could that have to do with golf? Because I think, unfortunately, many people equate hypnosis with some kind of event they were at, maybe some charity thing or whatever, and there's some guy on stage and some poor saps and chairs, and then some dignified guy, he's a VP of finance, starts clucking like a chicken or something.
Yeah.
So maybe we could start by just describing, you know, what is hypnosis and what isn't it?
For sure. So, you know, the shows are one thing, they're entertaining. The stuff we see on TV, movies and all that, it's, don't be listening to that. I'm not going to make you quack like a duck. I'm not going to make you give me your money, and I suppose, unless you want to. I could, in theory, make you rob a bank if you said to me, look, Jason, I'm robbing a bank in about 4 weeks. Got to work on my self-confidence. Can you help me? Yeah, in theory, I can do that because it's something that you want to do. But with hypnosis, you can't be made to say or do anything you don't want to say or do. The idea with hypnosis is getting into the subconscious mind, where that's where we hide our habits, our fears, our emotions. But our conscious mind doesn't like to let it in. It sort of acts like a boundary. You get into this relaxed state that we call hypnosis. I can get past your conscious mind into your subconscious and start delivering you positive messages so you make changes from the inside out. I can't give you a negative message. Even if I try, your brain's just going to reject it. So again, you're not going to say or do anything you don't want to say or do. But it's in that subconscious mind, we can start to make changes to improve our lives, and in this case, to help us when we're playing golf.
Well, we can get to golf in a second. Over the years, in my other job, I've had many different hypnotists, mentalists, etc. And it was explained to me a long time ago that the people you see doing those shows, they get the guys who are doing that work get very good at looking at the tells. They see the people in the audience that want to come up on stage. Their screening system is very, very good. So that's one version of it. But the one I want to talk about is what you said about helping people. Because over the years, I know that a lot of people have gotten great relief from habituating, cigarette smoking, etc. So because they obviously want to, but there's something about hypnosis that allows them to unlock that. So what is that?
For sure. You know, it's often our triggers. It's our triggers that cause us to want to smoke, to overeat, to something triggers us to be afraid, or we're on the golf course and we subconsciously see the hazard instead of, you know, focusing on the green and what we have to do, our goal. We get into these performance anxieties where it can really mess us up in the boardroom, on the golf course, in the classroom, in the bedroom. The idea here is to, I saw that look, Howard. Yeah, for sure, in the bedroom.
I was looking at Tim. Anyway, please continue.
I'm going to leave you two now to work this out. Okay.
You know, anyways, we'll work our own problems out. Please continue.
Yeah, so the idea here is that this stuff is all sort of locked in there, and it can sort of seize us up. Basically, our mind is so powerful, it can literally end up sabotaging our game, sabotaging our work, sabotaging us from getting our goals. So when we are in this relaxed state, as I say, we can start to affect these changes from the inside out. On stage, exactly as you said, these are people who the hypnotist is watching and bringing them up on stage. And you'll often see they even send some people back to their seats because they're just not allowing themselves to relax, allowing themselves to go into this state of hypnosis. I do the exact same thing. I do a free screening, a free consultation with every client even before I take them on as a client. And I can do it on video just as effectively from anywhere in the world as I can in my office. There's absolutely no difference. It's exactly the same.
Well, why don't we start there? So what is, like, we can talk about how it relates to golf, but give us some background and some foundation then of what a typical session might be.
For sure. So once I've determined that, yes, I can take you on as a client and we're going to proceed, and you, of course, accept that you're going to go in, everything I do is a program. I don't do a single session, although many of my clients will notice a change within their first session. But a session's generally made up of a little bit of chatting. I need to visit with you. How's your week been? What do you need working on? What do you find that you've been improving on? And then, of course, the whole idea of hypnosis, the whole idea of some relaxation so I can start to give you some positive suggestions into your subconscious mind to help you. And then, of course, there's generally homework, stuff that you take away, but the homework just involves relaxation. I even hazard to call it a homework because it is so relaxing. But that's generally how a session can take place. It's just sort of sitting there, whether you're in the comfort doing on video or in my office in the comfort of a chair, and just allowing yourself to open up and to talk about what it is that's really holding you back from achieving your goal.
Well, I guess that's the challenge, isn't it? Is getting someone to open up. And just like the hypnotist who does stage work, he or she can see those people who are resisting. And I'm sure that a lot of our listeners are going, hypnosis, are you kidding me? Really? That there's a natural resistance there. What is that resistance born of? Is it the fact that people are don't want to really take a look at the stuff that really gets in their way? When you talk about the subconscious, what are we really talking about? Are we talking about, say, belief systems? Are we talking about messages? What is it that's in the subconscious that keeps us from performing in golf or whatever we want to do?
Yeah, Tim, I think it's a good question. I think there's a lot of things that hold people back. Listen, anybody of reasonable intelligence can be hypnotized, but it's about a control. It's about the willingness to let go, know that you're never going to be in any uncomfortable position. Even the people on stage in those comedy shows, if they wanted to stop, they'd just walk off the stage. But they're having fun, they're enjoying, they're going along with the show. It's the same in my case as well. If you wanted to stop, you'd just open up your eyes and stop the whole process. I think there is often an ego that gets in the way. No, I know how to play. No, I know what I'm doing. No, I know how to do, you know, whatever it is that you want. But there is going to be a mental component to everything. I mean, even with weight loss, yes, you need your trainers. Yes, you need to eat properly. Yes, you need to exercise. But a lot of people have issues up here. It's the mental part of it where they're having trouble of just saying, okay, that's the part I have to get over. It's the same with sports or golf. I'm not going to teach you how to play. I'm going to teach you to relax, get in the zone, and focus. And you can still do your training and still do your practicing and still playing. But it's a lot about just, I think it's that, I think we have a fear of letting go.
Yes.
In many cases.
And 100%.
And I've been, my older brother is a psychologist, and over the years I've had a couple of occasions, once to try and quit smoking, but several times on the show I've been hypnotized. And I think part of it is just what people don't get, the listeners you're talking about, Tim, like, go, what does that mean? Well, it really means a deep relaxation, a feeling of allowing subliminal messages to permeate this shell we have. But at the basics, would you not say, Jason, that it's getting somebody to, whether it's on Zoom or in your office, to allow themselves to relax at a really deep level that's not sleeping? Because I think a lot of people mix it up with you're falling asleep. You're not asleep. And as you say, you're totally conscious, but you're in a state of allowing messaging to get in. And that's, I guess, what a hypnotist is, really, is part analyst, part social work, but also you're sort of you're sherping the experience for somebody of deep relaxation.
Correct. All hypnosis is self-hypnosis. So right. I am teaching, you're the one in control, not me. You're the one who can start it and stop it at any time. And as exactly as you said, Howard, you're not quite asleep. You're not quite awake. It's sort of somewhere in between where you could fall asleep. That's the worst thing that's going to happen the worst thing that's going to happen is it's just not going to work because you're not going to let go. But really the worst thing that's going to happen is you're going to have an amazing nap and you're going to wake up from it. But the idea is part of what the training I do is to help you not fall asleep, to just find that fine line, and exactly as you said, to just let go, allow whatever messages are supposed to come in. And every session's different. Many of my clients will say that they experience something different every time, because it is very true. You can't do it incorrectly. Mm-hmm. All hypnosis is a self-hypnosis, and whatever is right for you in that session that you're doing, whether it's on home or on session with me, is the one that's going to be right for you at that time.
I think this is why so many people are resistant to it or just slough it off as something stupid. They think of hypnotism as like a cartoon where you see someone's eyes go kind of like in those swirlies, or that it's kind of like this psychedelic experience where they're not completely in control. I just think that word hypnotize puts people in this place where they think they'll black out, or they're not conscious, or they're just kind of not in control, which I think speaks to the fear that so many people have. Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly it. You won't lose control. You will essentially remember everything. You're aware that, I don't know, outside, if the, you know, through the window you hear an ambulance going by or something, you just don't care because you're relaxing. You're just focusing on your breathing, getting into that relaxed state and allowing these effective changes to come from the inside out.
How much of it is that, in essence, we change our brainwave frequencies? Like beta is, I think, the normal waking consciousness, you know, answering emails, having a conversation, the normal thinking we do. How much of it is we just change those brainwaves into the slower, I guess, what it is, I'm not, like delta, theta, et cetera.
Yeah, exactly. And that's exactly what it is. It's just about that, going into that deep state of relaxation, not quite asleep, not quite awake. And as I say, it's in that state where your subconscious mind is more open to the suggestions, more open to the positive reinforcements. There's no ticking fob watch going back, right. No lasers from my eyes. It's none of that garbage.
Well, that's disappointing because I was really hoping there would be lasers from your eyes right. At some point. Well, let's talk about how it could relate to a golfer. A golfer comes to you because we've talked about, you know, getting into this state, and you've mentioned suggestions a couple times. Excuse me. So who creates the narrative, the golfer or you? Do you know what I mean?
Well, I'm guiding them. Yeah, I'm guiding them for it. And however they're going to interpret it is the way that's right for them.
But what I mean, Paul, is like somebody comes to you and says, I get very nervous in tournaments, or I'm, you know, yes. I get nervous with my, whenever, you know, whatever it is. So somebody comes with you and presents as a golfer some scenario. Do you then, like, again, when I say create the narrative, are you the one who says, okay, well, based on what we've talked about, here's what I'm going to suggest you do?
Absolutely. So everything I do, it is a program. It is obviously designed, but it has to be customized to the individual because everybody's different. So for sure, there will be, listen, the overall thing of smokers is they're all coming to you, they want to quit smoking.
Yeah.
The overall thing with golfers is they're coming to you, they want to improve their game, but they all have their own nuances.
Exactly. And there's different parts of the game. Some people might be nervous when it comes to chip shots. Some people don't like when other people are watching them on the first tee. And so what you said, I'm assuming, is in that in the chit chat at the beginning, that's what you're trying to glean, and then you do the narrative.
Precisely. That's exactly what it is. And then try to customize it. But overall, the theme, if you will, that I've seen with any athlete that comes to see me for their performance improvement is just they're not present. They're not in the game. They're not there in the moment. The horn honks and they're distracted by that. Their friends are jeering them and making fun of them as they're playing, and they're messing up. They're too busy thinking about the shot three shots ago, and they're not able to continue on because it's still on their mind instead of, you know what? I'm going to let it go. I'm going to be present in the moment. The line I say is, let's get off the staircase and get on the stair. Okay. So the stair is here, and let's not think about what's happening, you know, future on. Be present right now.
So it's part of the skill that someone goes, or the experience, shall we say, that someone goes through some hypnosis sessions with you. And then let's say there's someone who gets really nervous when they're in contention in a golf tournament, and they tend to just, you know, make lots of bad shots coming in, and they feel disappointed. So after they've had some sessions with you, how would that person who finds themselves generally pretty nervous down the stretch, what could be different for them?
Yeah, it's a good question. They're just happier. When you're happy and relaxed, you're going to enjoy the game more. The problem I try to explain them is your golf game isn't the issue. You know how to play. You've got a pro helping you. You're taking lessons. You're going to practice, whatever. The idea is that in that tournament, if you miss the shot, for instance, that's all your mind is on before you come and see me. And that is what's taking you through. I've had clients who come to me and they say they had a really bad game. They just play for fun. They play for fun on the weekends. They go home and they're fighting with their spouse.
Oh, yeah. We know
those
guys.
Because they had a bad game,
yeah,
when they're relaxing. And so, it's just, they said it's ridiculous.
So your hypnosis sessions can equip people with some, because part of the hypnosis, you know, paradigm is that I leave your session and there's, do you give me a cue? What's my takeaway? So that when I'm faced with these situations, a trigger or something that I recall, is that what it is?
That is definitely a big part of it. Part of it is it's a muscle memory. I mean, golfing is all about, anything we do is about a muscle memory, and the repetitiveness of it. The muscle memory we're also building in is up here.
Mm-hmm.
Is that's up in your head. That's what it is that we are doing in the hypnosis, so that when you take it away, when you're in those moments where you are in a tournament, as you said, for instance, Tim, or what have you, that you are just now present. You mess up, you go, oh, well, I'm just going to continue on. I'm not going to throw my club out into the bushes because I'm so frustrated by what just happened. Just say, oh, well, and I just go on. But when you're more present and you're in zone and you're confident, you're getting out of your head.
Yeah,
you're
amazing.
Now going to be able to play better and be able to, more important, if you have a bad day, a bad game, so then it doesn't matter.
Typically, how many sessions do you recommend people come and see you for?
So it does vary. That's part of what we do in the free consultation to determine whether I think that this is going to be appropriate for them, and then sort of what a program length is going to be.
Okay.
Generally, it can be anywhere from 6 to 10. Sometimes, as I say, clients will sometimes notice a change within a few sessions only. But this is part of what we all do, that's all encompassing in the free consultation, just to make sure, as I say, it's going to work for them.
Nice.
Where do we find out more information about Jason Palter, and if anyone wanted to get a hold of you, what would they do?
For sure. So my website is Greater Toronto Hypnosis. Now, hypnosis is HYP, not HIP, HYPNOSIS.com. Greater Toronto Hypnosis.com. And all the information is there, phone number, email, anything you want to be able to reach. There's some testimonial videos up there, some stories, and of course some information and ways to contact me. And as I say, I offer a free consultation to every client just to make sure hypnosis is going to work for you. We can do it in person or do it over video.
Listen, man, you got a great, I love it. And you got a great rap on you. You got a great voice. The Greater Toronto Hypnosis Center. You know, a lot of our listeners have been, you know, 9 years with us trying to find different ways to, you know, make changes on and off the golf course. And here's another one that you might want to avail yourself of. Jason, thank you very much, my friend.
You bet. Thanks, guys, for having me.
Thanks, man. Good to see you. Cheers.
There we go. No. Tim, you recognize this song?
It might be out on that lawn, which is why at least half
Bob Welch.
Fleetwood Mac. And listen
when
to the
Bob Welch presents
yes. yes. Yeah, no, you're a gutter. I'm saying it's.
I
but it's not a
myself sometimes.
I'm not a Bob Welch. It's not a Bob Welch song, but it is a song called Hypnotized by Fleetwood Mac.
That's right. It's well done, sir.
But this was not when I think Bob Welch was in the band. I couldn't tell you that for sure. He left before they hit it huge. He wasn't in the band when they did Dreams. He was off doing his own. I played a Bob Welch song in the 70s. I used to like it. I can't remember it. Anyways, there's a guy going to hypnotize you. Hypnotize, as Letterman used to say.
You see, the sides were like glass.
Yeah, it was really interesting when I met Jason months ago. I think it was back in the fall. I gotta tell you, I had the big R resistance going to this thing. I went, really? Do I want to? And I went through a few sessions, but I was still resistant about it. But since, I've done more reading about it, and I've actually come to understand it a lot more. And there's actually, this is a subject of serious study by academics. It's
mm-hmm.
not, again, it's not just this cartoony thing, or the stage thing that we talked about. And there's actually some pretty interesting apps out there and books to read and different things. And in terms of you can, in essence, learn to self-hypnotize, which again, it just so loaded with, you know, preconceived notions that we have that, you know, go back to bad sitcoms and cartoons.
Yeah.
But really, I don't know that it's much different than the skills or the experience you can learn in meditation and just self-awareness, but through a slightly different way to do it.
No, I agree. Here, by the way, before I forget to play it for you, here's the song I was thinking of. Do you remember this when you were a young man in the 70s? You know, asking girls to dance. It's Bob Welch on Sweet Thoughts.
You are here and warm.
There. There's Bob Welch for you.
There you go. Yeah.
Let me respond to what you said. Yes, to all. I think that, you know, it's been around a long time. I think it's been, it's not anything new. Maybe new to you in terms of the field of study. But, I mean, but as far as that, Jason, and being, you know, hypnotized or using hypnosis, I think you're absolutely correct when you say it's, you know, it's very similar to meditation. It's just having somebody guide you.
Mm-hmm.
Our friend Kent Osborne has dabbled in the world of hypnosis, or, you know, subconscious guide. When I met Kent a few years ago, he put together a tape for me that I used to listen to, and it was him basically guiding my subconscious in a form of hypnosis.
Yeah, interesting. Well, Carl Morris used to, when in early parts of his career, he was an NLP guy.
Yeah.
And he did hypnosis. And I actually borrowed a few things from Carl. Well, many things from Carl. And one of those things was the process of anchoring. And that was, if someone had it, after they've had a round and had, say, a nice stretch or a couple holes, but it's to kind of relive that experience, close their eyes, breathe deeply, and just kind of reimagine that experience and whatever feeling they had or sensations, to, in essence, anchor those in their body, say in their chest or whatever, so that they can kind of bring them out when they need to.
Well, it's kind of what we've talked about when people get, you know, for some reason, and we've had this conversation where, you know, men feel very comfortable expressing negative emotions, but not so comfortable expressing positive ones.
Oh, yeah.
And what that does is it, you know, the more, you know, bombastically you freak out and scream and, you know, all the chemical stuff that's happening, the cortisol is released. But what it does psychologically is it anchors that moment in time.
Yep.
And, you know, we all have worked hard here on this program to do the opposite, which is, you know, be neutral or non-invested in a bad shot and very invested or anchoring something positive that happens. And it takes some practice because, you know, we're not wired like that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, here's my first shameless plug of my new upcoming book.
What, I'm sorry, what's the name of this book? Six Transformational Recipes.
Processes.
Six your recipes life. For six different pasta nights for your family.
Easy dinners you can make. That's in the right. Microwave.
In one pot dinners from Tim O'Connor. Six Transformational One Pot Dinners. I love it.
That's right.
I love it, man.
So it was interesting when I was the assistant coach of the University of Guelph men's and women's golf team. What I noticed was that on the way home from tournaments, particularly the guys, you'd hear them go, "You wouldn't believe what happened to me on 14. I got a bad lie, and then I hit a tree," and this tale of woe and misery that would go on. And then someone would go, "Oh, you think that's bad? On 7, and so they would do exactly what you were just talking about. They'd be anchoring all this bad shit that would happen. And of course, you know, sports psychologists tell us that if we anchor those bad feelings in similar situations, they come up again. So one of the things I've done in my new upcoming book,
which is called
Getting Unstuck, Six Transformational Practices for Golf Nerds. So one of the practices...
In your upcoming book, one of the practices is...
is that you reflect on your best shot of the day. And I don't mean necessarily that you absolutely pured it right at your target and it finished 3 feet from the hole, but just the experience was just something you really enjoyed, you know, how you made the decision you felt over the club, the choice you made, what you felt maybe as you hit the shot. You relive that and you can take that forward. So I made that a practice on our golf team. We went around on the way back from tournaments. Everyone would say, "Yeah, hey, I'm Luke, I'm feeling this, and my best shot of the day was this." And it was just a something that gave something positive to latch onto,
yeah,
but also something they could take forward into their next practice or next round.
Yeah, that's it's a great practice. And, you know, if you're wondering what, you know, us golf nerds journal about, that's one of them. I mean, it's like you write down or, you know, make a point of, because it might be the shot that landed 3 feet. You know, and as opposed to, but the point is, I think, dwelling on something positive versus perpetuating or, as you say, anchoring something negative. As I mentioned off the top of the show, I had a couple emails. One of them, and I've had this email for a few weeks, and I apologize to Andrew Smolak, who said, "Hi, GSL, I'm an STD living in Abu Dhabi, Tim."
Ooh.
Yeah, man. He says, "I'll be spending some time around the GTA this summer. I play numerous 2 to 3 day amateur senior events in the region where he lives. Was hoping you could suggest some competitions." Andrew, I'm sorry I didn't get back to you. He says, "I appreciate your recommendations." I didn't get back to Andrew only because by the time he sent that, a lot of entries have been sort of out and about, and I really couldn't help him. But what I did want to say is the next part of his email. He says, "Would you consider an episode devoted to your tournament schedule and competitive prep? I'm sure the listeners would be interested to know more about how you map out a specific course and prepare specific types of shots you'll need prior to competing." And
great,
I thought
stuff.
Here's what I thought. I don't want to do today, but I thought we could, not just for me, but from you as well as a coach of competitive players, and maybe get a guest or two, or guest for sure. Maybe that would be a good one with Fitzsimmons. Get him back
exactly
to talk about how tournament players prepare for tournaments. Because, you know, I have what I do, and I mean, you have what you've done with your players and yourself. And it would be good to get Charlie because he's played at a higher level than all of us. So, Andrew, thanks for your email.
Yeah.
And we'll definitely consider it. And appreciate you getting us in Abu Dhabi, which is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
We might be, and again, I don't want to bullshit here, but we might be Abu Dhabi's favorite golf psychology podcast. You never know. You never know.
Why not?
Why not us? The other one I got today was a Humble and Fred listener. And I was going to save this for the Humble and Fred email show. And now I can't. Where is? Oh, here he is, Scott. It says, "Scott Acton. Says, hi guys, not sure if you've seen this one, but I thought you'd get a kick out of it. And I wasn't sure what it was, and it was a Facebook link. And what it is a couple of guys who call baseball for a, like one of those minor league teams, like single A, double A, whatever it is.
Like the Mud Hens or something?
Yeah, they're the Michigan, West Michigan Whitecaps is the baseball team. What they did for an inning, Or I think an at-bat, but it goes on for quite a while, so just bear with it. It's two guys calling baseball, but as though they were announcers at the Masters. Okay, so have a listen. Hold on. I went to the wrong thing. Here we go. I have to turn the volume on. Here we go.
Hello, friends. A beautiful Saturday afternoon in Comstock Park. This is inning number 7. Still in the front 9, if you will.
I gotta mute myself.
Eric Pinales hails from San Cristobal. It's about 30 kilometers from Santo Domingo.
And what you see in the video
Republic.
Is the at-bat's going, right?
Right now, looking at a pitch from about 60 feet, 6 inches. Idea how that one stayed out.
It's just so dumb. I'll just play it for a couple more seconds.
I struggled a lot in 2022 with his control.
And now
a fine hit.
The guy's
deep to left center.
Yeah, way out.
Off the wall. Lucas Dunn into second base. Exquisite. A one-out double here in the 7th.
There you go. So just something a little different approach on the show today.
patient.
Oh, that was really...
If they called baseball like the Masters.
That's... I love that. That's so imaginative.
Imaginative.
But it's also so counter to the usual instead of the excitement, you know, the almost like the yelling of it's off the wall. And yeah. It's just like it was like not happen. It's like they're on some heavy duty quaaludes.
That's something. Right. It's very sleepy. I like baseball play by play. I actually like golf on the radio too. I listen to PGA Tour radio if I'm in my car. I actually like baseball play-by-play on the radio, sometimes more than watching it on TV. It just puts me in a nice mindset.
Well, there's a different rhythm. I was talking with the drummer in our band, he's more interested in things from England, like real football, mm-hmm. as they call it over there. And so he has like zero connection to the Toronto Maple Leafs and the state of anxiety that I and other people are in these days as they go against the Bruins.
Mm.
But I was saying how going to sports is such an interesting experience. But when you go to a baseball game, it's like you kind of the all the stuff of getting there and driving and you park and you walk and you grab a beer and a hot dog and then you sit down and you go like, when is something going to happen?
Yeah.
And you have to get into that rhythm of it. And it's the same with golf. I would say like when you think of it, sometimes it's like, really? Somebody hits a shot and then they walk 300 yards to hit another one? It just doesn't sound so exciting.
I went to opening day this year for the second year in a row. First, I'd never done it before. And my buddy Rudra.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I did it last year for the first time, opening day
did
at the ballpark.
Did you see Geddy Lee? Was Geddy Lee?
I was just a few seats away from Geddy Lee because my friend Rudra has really sweet seats, kind of ish behind home plate. But to your point about it, you get there and it's very exciting. And then it just kind of unfolds in a sleepy manner. I got to be honest with you. I barely can make it to the eighth inning. Like, it's fine. And I can, I mean, being in person at a baseball game is fun because you can kind of watch what you want to watch. Like, I like watching the guy on the on-deck circle, watching the pitcher to try and time his release. Things like that. But I couldn't do, like, you know, I couldn't do 81 home games, honestly. It's just too. Goodness. It's just so boring. It's so fun.
But I mean, baseball, golf are similar in that when it's, you know, in golf a major championship, in baseball it's the playoffs.
Yes,
the time in between pitches and shots is just incredible.
It's significant drama because everything means something.
Yeah, I remember just the one. I guess I was at a playoff when the Jays were in that time period in which they won the World Series, I guess, twice in a row. I remember being in there at a game in the stretch drive for the pennant, and just every pitch was just crazy. It was just the difference
in
terms of when it's playoff and regular season is like, or close to playoff.
Well, same with hockey. I mean, I find hockey dreadfully boring in February when it's a team, you know, it's like, you know, the Leafs are playing some team and it doesn't really mean anything. I tend to, over the last few springs, watch a lot of Leafs hockey, although this year not so much. Because football has replaced for me, I like the gameplay in football. Even if it's a team I'm not interested in, I can watch it. With the Leafs, I watched parts of some of their last few playoff games, but it's the sort of shroud of futility that the shroud of futility that is cloaked over this team. Because though they won, we're recording this on Wednesday, May 1st. By the time you guys hear it, the Leafs will have either been eliminated or be playing in Boston for Game 7. But they just have this feeling of like, it doesn't really matter because no matter how good they are in the regular season, they sort of suck in the playoffs and have for many, many years in a row.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Is that going to make you cry? you have a look on your face like, oh, I'm holding it. Don't tell me that.
No, but it's so much. But it's so much like golf in terms of the recurring. How come this always happens to me? And it just almost seems inevitable. Yeah. There's so many golfers, I'm sure, who have been they're going down the stretch and they're finally going to break, you know, 100 or 90 or 80 or something, and they find some way to screw it up. And I just find that it's pretty similar, and it's usually just, you know, it's mindset. It's you know, coming back, hearkening back to our conversation with Jason Palter, belief systems, patterns, and just normal way of doing things. And we just find this way to get in our own way. And I just don't think it's dissimilar at all what happens to golfers who find themselves to be choking dogs, just like what tends to happen to the Toronto Maple Leafs. But never say never.
No, okay.
Avoid song.
No, I think golfers, as sports fans, are the luckiest of sports fans. Mm. Why I say that, Timberly, is because when I'm watching Buffalo Bill play Kansas, I find it highly entertaining. When I'm at a Blue Jay game, you know, it's mildly entertaining. But when I watch golf, every week that I watch golf, for me as a golf fan, it's entertaining on a number of levels. And here's why I say we're the luckiest of sports fans, because I can always find something to see a golfer do that will either be instructive from a swing standpoint, instructive from a mental performance standpoint, a game, because I can go out the next second and apply what I've learned watching it. There's no other sport at our age. You know, I don't know, maybe if you're a 22-year-old university hockey player, you see an NHL game, you might pick something up, but the rest of us aren't. But that's why I think golf fans are lucky, because even something that doesn't matter in the bigger picture, the Zurich team play, I saw some stuff that I'm working on, because I want to see, okay, if this is what I'm working on, am I seeing it in the best players in the world? So mm-hmm. We get entertained on a bunch of different levels, I think.
Yeah, well,
that's
well,
my what, opinion, so, Tim.
Well, sure, I love it. I love it. I your love opinion it. Is you're the GSL. I want your opinion. I want your blessings. I want your wisdom. Your
but don't you think that we're lucky as fans?
Yes, absolutely, we are. But so, what was something that you watched in the Zurich Classic that you relate to in your own game?
Maybe well,
I'm putting you on this spot.
No, because you asked me a question on, you messaged me. We were talking back and forth about something. And I said I was going to go work with my coach this weekend.
You
said,
oh, you're working on width.
Width, exactly. And I said, I'm going to go work with, because I hadn't seen my buddy John Cochran, who has been teaching me now for about 6-7 months. Well, off and on for 30 years, but I've known basically the only person I've been working with now since last fall. So I saw him last weekend, and you asked me on my way, what are you working on? I said, well, I'm doing this thing because I tend to, like some other golfers, I tend to, on my downswing, kind of will suck my arms underneath the plane. I don't want to get too complicated, but I'm trying to keep my arms wide, and we were working on a couple of drills. It was really good, because having somebody else see you do it, because I can tape my swing and kind of see, am I getting there, or am I getting closer? But having someone else also watch it was great, very instructive. And then Sunday, when I watched the golf, because I didn't watch much of it on the weekend, I was watching Rory's swing very wide as he... So that's the thing I think a lot of golfers get wrong. In our... I get it wrong. In our effort to get to the ball, we throw our arms, for lack of a better descriptor, at the golf ball. But in actual fact, they go away first. It's a weird thing to feel. Like you're... Because think about it. They've gone back and around, but we rush to get our hands on top of the golf ball. But in actual fact, they go back and around and they go away first. Almost like, I've heard it described, and it's going to sound strange, but it's almost like you're casting the club in the opposite direction. But what that does is it keeps your arm, you don't, it's a feel, but what it does is it keeps your arms wide. So I know it was a long answer, but that's what I'm doing.
Oh, that's
so
cool.
I see I watch that in professional golfers.
Yeah, it's really... So I'm going to make sort of two comments.
Comment away.
You said you're working with a coach. So I started working with a bass guitar coach just last week.
Love that.
And
on your swing?
on my ability to swing.
No, that's funny. It's like you said, it's what a funny thing that is. It's like, I'm working with a coach for my golf swing. He's the bass guitar, but he's got a great eye. Sorry. Yeah. This just made me laugh. Go ahead. No, so you're working on a bass guitar coach. Of course you are.
There's a couple of songs that I just been struggling with for the longest time. And just, it's just that benefit of that third party perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And he just, there's a couple of things that I was struggling with, and he went, well, I noticed that you do this. Like, anyway, I'm not getting into detail, and just keep this in mind. It was like, whoa, that just sort of sorts that right out. And just some little things that he noticed based on, you know, his, you know, 30 years of experience. His name is Jason Razzo. He's an amazing player. But the thing that I also wanted to make just a quick comment on was things that we can glean from watching on TV. And one is that, man, if you want to perform well in competitions, you have to perform in competitions. Like as Mo Norman used to say, how do you get tournament tough? Play in tournaments. Anyways, where I'm getting to in a very ham-handed way was, it was seemed so obvious to me that the Zurich Classic was not a fair fight. Rory and Shane against these guys, most of whom I'd never heard of.
Yeah. Oh, you mean the last day when they, yeah, the experience.
The last day.
Yeah. The bunch of young guys with, like, I think they said at one point, Rory McIlroy had more tournament wins than the next six guys or 10 guys on the leaderboard who had a total of six.
Exactly. Yeah. Rory had 24 victories. And it was just as they come down the stretch, I don't know what it was. It was the weight of the moment being on TV going against Rory and Shane, but they just all crumbled.
Yeah.
You could just see it happening. And so I put out a tweet. I can kind of see the argument for limited field events when you watch this. But it's just, I think the thing that we could take away, you know, couch golfers and whatnot is, if you want to play better in your inner club event or whatever, or club C, you got to get in tournaments and you got to get that experience. It's the only way you're going to do it.
I totally agree.
That all those guys who just wilted, you know, it was probably embarrassing. Some of the shots they hit were just, you know, duck hooks and snipes and all this, but they'll all learn and benefit from that experience.
Well, they're all guys, you know, even though they may not be household names, they're all guys that have won at multiple levels, or they wouldn't be in that tournament. That being said, I wanted to sort of, like, I kind of, again, I'm not the average golf fan because I watch so much of it, but I like the lack of notoriety in some of those stories because it's,
oh yeah,
because 100%. I find that intriguing. That a guy, like, I can't remember the two kids, but both were from Utah. They grew up playing together. It was Zach Blair and his partner. And his partner was his partner's 11th tournament on the PGA Tour. Like, even though they're not household names, you know, this tournament could have changed their lives. And I'm on board with you that, you know, they'll all get experience and it'll be great for them going forward. But I kind of dig the fact that you're seeing somebody's life change, or possibly life change.
Yep.
But that being said, yeah, man, it got toward the last two or three holes. And, you know, Rory McIlroy and Shane Lowry have won the British Open, or the Open Championship. So hanging out in New Orleans playing dickety-doo fucking ball, whatever that was, alternate shots, not a big deal. They've been in the Ryder Cup together. Like, yeah, seriously,
singing a Journey song.
Yeah, like they're just like, to them it was like Saturday opening scramble or some shit. The other guys are like, this could change my life, and Rory's going, I wonder if I'll make enough to fuel up my jet.
Yeah, I know, and I love how the whole thing started with them being drunk at the Ryder Cup or in the aftermath and say, we should play together.
Yeah.
We should tee it up.
But I think your point is a good one. It wasn't a fair fight because of, you know, because, and the as the day wore on, these other players, as you say, they wilted. Rory and Shane Lowry, mostly Rory, just got better.
Yeah.
It got better as the day wore on because he could see what they were doing to the rest of the leaderboard. You know, when they came on, when the broadcast started, they were like five or six behind. Some group had already finished at 25 under.
Yeah, the guys that went in the playoff.
The guys that went in the playoff. Now, that was just, that was brutal. Martin Trainer. But they could see as they got better as the afternoon wore on, all the other groups never advanced. Anyway, golf's tough as hell, as you know. And this is what we do. This is why we do this show. I know we got to go. How much time do we have for you? Because I know you got another thing.
No, I'm actually pretty good. We can go another 5-10 minutes? Sure.
Well, because I wanted to. I have an announcement. I have a GSL announcement. I have decided to name the season for me. I've decided to call the 2020... It's so dumb. Even for me, this might be dumb. I'm proclaiming the 2024 golf season for me. I'm calling it the season of balance.
Ta-da!
The season of balance, laddie. Ugh. And why am I calling it the season of balance? Because the season, SOB, the season of balance, 2024, the season of balance. And I have my very first round today at my club. It's Men's Day. I have literally not played golf in Ontario. I've been back since March 30th, and I have not played golf other than the little trip there to North Carolina. Just haven't been into it.
So just, you totally missed April.
All of it.
Yeah, because today, May 1.
Yeah, man. So part of the reason is I wanted to do other things and, you know, and get back into yoga and do some fitness stuff, working on my back a little bit. I was talking to Kent on our drive back and forth to North Carolina about, you know, this kind of feeling of like, I don't know, how much more can I do? How many more balls can I hit? Even though I was working on my game, I love that part of it. So I'm calling this a season of balance because I spent the weekend setting my schedule, including our tournament in Saugeen and all the days of golf that I have ahead of me. So I'm going to build into every week some non-golf days so I can continue to do yoga. I do Spanish a couple times a week. I have a Spanish coach, as you know. So I'm not going to just, like I thought to myself, what if I tried 18% less? Would I really suffer? You know what I mean?
17.
You know, what if I just tried 18 to 20% less? That doesn't mean I'm not going to want to get ready for a tournament. That doesn't mean I'm not going to work on my game in the golf lab here at the GSL headquarters. But what do you think about that? And I wanted to throw this out at you because I didn't want to give you a warning. Because I have definitely erred on the side of overdoing it to my detriment. So the season of balance, what do you think? SOB.
Well, I applaud your proclamation. Erred on the side of overdoing it? Oh, my dude.
I know.
I was just... For years, I've been barking at you to ratchet it back.
Yeah, man.
Not, like, I always thought, how does this guy not burn out? And it's been so interesting, you know, witnessing your ascendance as a golfer and as a man in terms of, you know, I was wondering, like, how does someone become a scratch golfer? Oh, you play every fucking day.
Yeah, man.
Or you have a golf club in your hand every day. I remember learning, it was just last year I learned that. Really? Every 365? You
every
got a
day.
Golf club in your hand?
Every day?
And there's just been many years in which I wondered, like, how do you not burn out? How do you not just lose it? The enthusiasm, the ability to focus, just physically tired, you know, the game beats you up. You need this rest and recovery. Because I never heard or rest. You're doing the recovery part.
Yeah. Well, and I've heard, you know what, we've talked about it and I talked a lot about it with Kent and I thought a lot about it. You know, I spoke a lot to, you know, Raymond Pryor, Dr. Pryor last year about, you know, this malaise I had about it. And I thought, you know, maybe that's what it is for me. Because once today starts, from now until the end of September into early October, I have tournaments scheduled. And so I'm going to build my weeks around some golf, like I play Men's Night Wednesdays. I have this little tournament thing on Saturdays. And then the other days that I will play is when I have a tournament. So other than that, I'm going to do yoga on Sundays. I got a class on Thursdays that I go to. I talked to my Spanish teacher last night. I said, listen, you know, I can't do 4 days a week, but, you know, could 1 or 2 days work? And that's why I want to have some balance in it so that I don't, you know, get completely consumed by it. I mean, I love watching golf and I still will do that. And I love talking about it, but I don't want to have, like, because there's lots of times in the summer where 10 and 12 and 14 days in a row will go by and I've either hit balls or played continually. And by the time it's over, you just get like, I'm sore and I don't want to do this anymore. So yeah, that's why I'm announcing the season of balance for 2024.
I love that.
And I want you to check me. Check me from time to time. I will have updates from the season of balance.
You see, what's so interesting is that, you know, now that I've known you for 9 going on 10 years, like when you do anything, man, you're like neck deep.
Yeah, it's
like
a lot.
Head, hands, and feet right in. You know, learning how to ride a unicycle, learning how to be a pilot. You just didn't get your license and tick that box. No, you went extra level. I love that story you told about being in a course for, you know, guys who drive, you know, fly for Air Canada and stuff. Like, say, what do you do? I host a radio
show. That's right. In one of my ratings that I got in this test prep course, it was a 2-day test prep course. And they went around the room. There's 25 guys. I was the only one that didn't fly for a living. They all looked at me like, what are you doing here? I go, I don't know. I like it.
But, you know,
I'm nuts is what I said.
But that, again, it's sort of like the bigger piece is that golf is the way you live your life. And the way you live your life is the way you golf. And so it's not one of the things that golfers, I just think they just don't often get this, is that what holds them back is not their inability to pronate or to shift their weight or to not be a choking dog in a tournament. It's their behaviors. Mm-hmm. And it's just the things that we do to, you know, relieve our anxiety or run after what we're craving. And so I have a sense that what you're doing is you're sort of taking a look at, oh, this is the way I operate in the world. And maybe we need to adjust this a bit.
100%. And the things that I get enjoyment out of outside of golf, as soon as the tournament season starts, I get rid of them. And there's no balance, which is where the title comes from. So I had my lesson with John on Saturday. Sunday was the first day I went to our golf course because it happened to be a couple hours where it didn't rain. And I worked on some stuff. I had a great session, hit some balls, chipped and putted, had a lot of fun, and then left the golf course and went to a yoga class.
Love it.
And it was a much better day than if I'd stayed at the golf course, you know, played some golf. Like, I knew I was going to play today. So all of it to say, yeah, I've recognized that some of those behaviors don't serve me. And as I say, you know, so how much suffering would my golf game, if I've tried between 16.7 and 18.5 less percentage, you know, what if I, you know, golf's not going to get mad at me. I'll be fine.
It's not going to be there with its arms crossed.
Where have you been, Howard? Where have you been? All right.
Hey, just before we go, I want to just, speaking of resistance.
Yes, sir.
I still think that there's a lot of, particularly men, who hear about yoga and think about just this isn't, that's not a manly way that you do things, get physically fit or whatever. I think this is, we'll just take a brief dip into this and we'll take a deeper dive later. Let's get Brooke on or let's get somebody else. But what does yoga do for you as a golfer, maybe mentally, physically?
Well, first of all, less and less. Like, you know, maybe when you say men don't think it's, listen, there's lots of guys on the PGA Tour that are doing yoga and doing yoga like stretching and poses. My buddy Grant, New Brunswick Grant, who I went to North, he does yoga like me. You know what it is? It's a great way to stay in shape without, say, maybe going to a gym and lifting weights. Now, I do some of that with Brooke. We do some strengthening. But I'll tell you, man, it's hard. It really is a lot harder than you'd think, especially hot yoga. Because nothing makes, like, I go in there and it's just, like, honestly, I leave there, it looks like I've been swimming. I'm sweating so much.
So that's just awesome. I love that.
So yeah, I think from a strengthening standpoint, there's lots to it. We should get somebody on here that does yoga. Well, didn't we, have we not done that in the time we've done this show?
In the early days we had,
let's get somebody else on here.
Roxanne or Rosa.
Yeah, yeah.
It was Rosa.
I can't remember.
Anyways, just,
it was
just
Rosa. It was Rosa Riga. Yeah. Yeah. So right.
Yeah. I started seeing a physio person with a background in yoga 3 years ago because I just have an old guy left hip pain.
Yes.
And now, 4 days a week, I start my day off by plugging the kettle, unfurl, if that's what you do, with your yoga mat and get on that floor. And I do about 15, 20 minutes of various yogi things.
Well, I'll tell you, and it's really good for you. It's great for your fascia. Yeah. Have you never ventured into a yoga studio?
I have not.
You would love it. It's like, it's very, also very mentally taxing because.
Do you mean the hot yoga one?
Either hot or
Bikram?
Yeah, not Bikram. Well, I do a different, but yeah, I've done Bikram as well. But any hot yoga studio is all these poses, but you're mentally, it's the mental chatter going on. Like with me, it's like. You know, I don't like when they hold the pose too long, so I get really fucking frustrated anyway. Or I don't like being too close to people, so I get, you know, it's like it's a real, yeah. I'm supposed to be.
Is anyone going to watch me as I lose this pose? And
exactly.
Relax or something?
And then they say things to you at the end. You know, it's called yoga practice, not yoga perfect. I know. I told this joke about when I first started yoga. Like I've been doing this for 20 years. When I first started years ago, I thought I'm going to get to scratch. I'm going to be scratch yoga.
And then, there you go. See, that's what we're talking about.
And then I realized, but see, I gave up that a long time ago in my 50s. I decided that I was never going to get to scratch yoga. And that I realized one day, that's not the point of it. How weird.
There you go.
Weird.
Season of balance.
Right, season of balance. SOB. Thanks to Jason Poulter, the Greater Toronto Hypnosis Center. And don't forget, one of these days, there will be another announcement on this program where Tim O'Connor's latest book, Six Transformational Potluck Recipes.
Microwave ovens.
For microwave. One pot microwave recipes for the golfer.
Six dinners.
six household hacks to preserve jams and jellies. When is this book going to be available, Tim? I don't want to pressure you any more than you're being pressured by your own subconscious.
Soon.
Okay.
Soon. No, it's going to, I'm actually, today, I am finishing up proofing. I had to change some things in it because I changed the title of the book. So I had to change it. So it's going to go to my format person tomorrow. Same format person that our friend Kent Osborne used. Are we getting Kent on the show soon?
Well, once we have a quick meeting here and decide when the next taping is. Listen, everyone, thanks
I'll get ready for that.
Yeah, we just hang on. Don't go away because I know you got to go. But so everybody, we'll see you. Don't forget OscarBravo.com. Who is Oscar Bravo?
Who is Oscar Bravo?
Thank you. SecretLinks.golf. And of course, our title sponsor, as always, check out what's happening with the QI10 line of drivers, fairway woods, and irons at TaylorMadeGolf.com. .ca. See you next week, everybody. Double fall time. You feel alright when you hear the music ring.